Psychology Today says, according to a recent study, many people prefer to give themselves a mild electric shock than to sit in a room alone with their own thoughts. Did you hear that? Recent study says that many people would rather give themselves an electric shock than to be alone with their own thoughts by themselves. The study goes on to say that loneliness can be defined as a complex and unpleasant emotional response, something to isolation or lack of companionship. It can be either chronic or include anxiety and depression, and it has a lot to do with being disconnected. Often in our penitentiary system, they use solitary confinement as a means of punishment. And I know people who I personally know who've been in solitary confinement, and they talk about it being torment. I think that sometimes we view solitude like that. We view solitude as a place of isolation, a place of disconnect. And I'm not talking about community this morning. I'm talking about solitude. Something that should be familiar to us, especially if we've been born again for any period of time. But often what can happen is in our seasons of life, the busyness of our schedules, depending on whether you're a grandparent who travels all over the place to see their grandchildren all over the country, or you are a parent with children who are in sports and going here and there, and maybe you're just working full-time or more than full-time. There's a busyness that happens in our culture. A busyness that wasn't the same, I'll say, even in 2000 or 2005. A busyness that definitely wasn't the same when my grandparents were young adults in the 1930s or my parents were born in the 50s. Things change. And we continue to get busier and busier. And so I just want to revisit solitude this morning, because it can escape us sometimes. And may today just be the start of something, a reminder of something. It's that we chase our suffer. He said, we are so afraid of silence that we chase ourselves from one event to the next in order to not have to spend a moment alone with ourselves, in order to not have to look at ourselves in the mirror. Why do you think that would be the most common way that us as human beings would respond? Why would you not want to be in solitude? Anybody want to give an answer? Why would you not want to choose to be in solitude? Christine, you said that. Christine said, what if you don't like your own company? Anybody else? Why would you choose to not be in solitude? Maybe you view it as a waste of time. Or maybe it's unproductive. Or maybe you are afraid to be alone with you and Jesus and your own thoughts because you don't want to see what's going to be revealed. Maybe you're just afraid. Or maybe you're so type A and driven that you just don't take a step to breathe. And so solitude is something that can be foreign. We might be too busy or too afraid or too out of step with just getting a moment in our culture that we might miss some things that God says to us. Or we may not hear as clearly. You know, we gather like we do this morning, and you get a little bit of solitude in the mix of being surrounded by people, if you're able to put the distractions aside. But it's not quite the same as solitude, just you and the Lord. Again, I have a few quotes this morning because I found some authors who are able to practice solitude, maybe better than us. And Henry Nouwen is one of them. He once said, in our worried, overfilled lives, it is clear that we usually are surrounded by so much outer noise that it's hard to hear our God when he is speaking to us. We have often become deaf, unable to know when God calls us and unable to understand in which direction he calls us. And so again, this might be something that you do on a regular basis, and that is a really good thing. And you can encourage others and give them maybe wisdom on how to do it. Because even if you remember, if you're older and you don't have children at home and maybe you're not working and you have time, ample time to be alone, things are not the same as it was when you were younger. Culture has gotten busier. Maybe it's time to reestablish some of the spiritual disciplines. And not in a legalistic, rigid kind of way. Because we often beat ourselves up if we go, well, I don't pray enough, and I don't read enough, and I don't journal enough, and I don't spend time alone enough, and I'm always with people, and I'm always with children. And you can just overwhelm yourself and then not do anything. Larry Osborne is a pastor in the United States. And he's written a lot of books on teamwork and church building, like not building, but church team building, serving one another as part of a team. But he says discipleship isn't the search for a more disciplined life. It's the quest for a more obedient life. If you own 16 journals, none of which have more than 3 pages written on them, if every time you've tried to read through the Bible, you stall out in Leviticus or 1 Corinthians, and if you've tried spending a few days alone with God only to go stir crazy after a few hours, it might not mean that you're a terrible disciple. It might simply mean that you're a tad bit ADD, not much of a reader or an extrovert. Again, I just like how he brings something that makes it kind of funny. He goes on to say, the only way you know for sure is to check the fruit. And conversely, if you have piles of journals packed with prayers, observations, and reactions, if you read through the Bible twice a year, if you love solitude and getting up early in the morning and talking to God, it might not be that you're a great disciple. It might simply mean that you're introverted, type A personality who loves to read and learn. Again, he goes on to say, the only way to know for sure is to check the fruit. The idea of fruit, we've talked about it at length, is about a transformed life. Are we more kind than we used to be? Are we more forgiving than we used to be? Are we less judgmental than we used to be? Are we more like Jesus in response? Do the things that come out of us reflect him more than us? And if you're like me, then sometimes there's this response. Sometimes I go, how did that come out of me, Lord? I have to ask my children to forgive me for raising my voice. Or I have to help them understand that when I'm driving, I look like I want to hurt somebody. And that I don't actually, but I'm just concentrated on not cutting people off. Larry Osborne goes on to say, Jesus-pleasing spirituality isn't the prerogative of those who are disciplined enough. It's the prerogative of anyone who continues to grow in obedience, no matter how driven, disciplined, or intellectually oriented they are. Because again, we do beat ourselves up. Sometimes, and I have a picture. Dale, could you put up the slide there, please? See, sometimes in being alone, we often get distracted. I don't know if you can see that too well. That's how my mind looks all the time. Not everybody's mind looks like that, and that's okay. Which means for me, it's hard to read. It's hard to gather my thoughts. It's also hard to just speak off the cuff. I really have to know that the Lord is with me when I just speak, or I'm going to cause some catastrophe with my words and cause somebody to cry. Every one of us is different. Our brains work differently. But if you remember what Dwayne was talking about a couple weeks ago, so that God knew everything about you when he formed you. When he formed me, the struggles I might have, the learning issues I might have, the times when I'm by myself and I find myself going, praying about butterflies and tying my shoes and I'm half asleep over here and then I'm thinking about my children and I'm like, where did I put my keys? Again, you're not like me, but maybe some of you are, and that's okay, because we need to check the fruit of our lives. Going, understanding that spiritual disciplines are tools. They're not rules meant to be followed rigidly. They're tools, and we need to look at the tools that actually help us become more like Jesus. Solitude would be one of those things. Maybe even silence, again, in our culture, especially maybe as Pentecostals, in our culture, silence is something that is very foreign to us. So you take solitude and silence, and most people run away screaming. The dictionary says solitude is the state or situation of being alone. It's pretty straightforward. Or it's a lonely or uninhabited place. The biblical word, it doesn't hold any different meaning. It means a solitary place. But the biblical context is different. Biblical context is not one of isolation or disconnect or loneliness. It's actually one of refreshment, strength, and time with the Father. Did you hear me? It's a time of refreshment, strength, and time with the Father. Luke 5:16 says, but Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. He often modeled prayer in solitude. He calls us to do the same in Matthew 6. He says, when you go and when you pray, go into your room and shut the door and pray to your Father who is in secret. And sometimes there are some who do this literally and they have special rooms in their house and they're able to go and they shut the door. The King James says closet. The American Standard says inner chamber. But it means any place of privacy, a room, a closet. It's somewhere where one cannot be easily seen. But this morning, I want to challenge us to think about two different things when we're talking about solitude. Solitude as a physical place. Being able to go and think and finding places even in your travel if you're driving. Or maybe you do have young children at home and you're never able to escape them. Mine aren't as old as young anymore. There's times when I can just be absent for a moment and they're going to survive. Or maybe you're traveling lots for work. Maybe you're all over the place and you need to choose to have some time where it's just you and the Lord. So I want you to kind of think that, picture that in your mind, because I can't tell you how to have solitude. And we're actually going to have, hopefully you'll discuss a little more with me as we go on, but that's this one idea, actually going somewhere. And so again, as your pastor, I can come here during the week. There's not a lot of people here. Sometimes it's so busy I put in earplugs and I shut my door and pretend like I'm not in there. And I just spend time working on sermons and spending time with Jesus. And I'm able to do that. But I know when I worked full time that it was difficult to do. Again, the idea in your mind, in your heart, this idea of solitude. And I think Susan spoke about something like this a little while ago. But it's the idea that at Bridgeview, I can go to Bridgeview. I can be surrounded by people. I can close my eyes and surrender my thoughts to the Lord like I'm sleeping, but that's not the case. It's me and Jesus. I don't know what's going on. It's kind of like a child. I close my eyes, you can't see me anymore. I don't always recommend that because, as you'll see in a little bit, it's hard to do certain things if you're in a public place being alone with the Lord. But you can go for walks. You can walk the trails in this area. You can go fishing. You can go hiking. You can go hunting. You can be alone maybe. Sometimes it's not always good to go hunting and hiking alone. It can be dangerous. At the same time, it allows you to just shut yourself in. Maybe you live on a large property somewhere and you can just go for a moment and just kind of rest. Because what happens often as human beings, we like to go to extremes. So when I was a young adult, when I first got saved, it was just me. No family, no children, just me. I was able to be me and the Lord all the time. Before work, during coffee breaks, at lunch break, at evening when I got home, at the church sometimes, I would just go. I was able to freely be able to choose. And then at Bible college, often I would choose to be not social, and I would just spend time in my room, and often I was by myself in my room. My roommates tended to change often. Hopefully it wasn't because of me. But I was often alone. But I would choose to be alone rather than go out and socialize. Again, if you're an extrovert, you would choose to go out rather than stay in. But when seasons changed in my life, I tend to be all or nothing. And so when it suddenly became hard for me to just spend alone time, it just stopped. And then I noticed there was some problems. Because I can be black and white, rigid. Again, not everybody in here is going to be black and white or rigid, and you're able to flow and move, but some of you aren't. And so it's learning how to be both in your heart, having a place of solitude, being able to shut yourself away, but also choosing to intentionally practice times when you go away and be with the Lord. And not beating yourself up if you have trouble doing either of them. Solitude is not a place to live in. Because if we live in solitude, we isolate ourselves from community, and we're called to be in community. But if you never have times of solitude where it's just you and the Lord, you're disconnected from Him in intimacy. And so maybe it's time to rethink, revisit solitude. So this morning I have a few passages. You have points in your bulletin and your outline. Just want you to be able to think through these. Don't worry, I'm not going to quiz you. I'm not going to make you come up front. Matthew 14 says, on Herod's birthday, the daughter of Herodias danced for them and pleased Herod so much that he promised with an oath to give her whatever she asked. Prompted by her mother, she said, give me here on a platter the head of John the Baptist. The king was distressed, but because of his oaths and his dinner guests, he ordered that her request be granted and had John beheaded in prison. His head was brought in on a platter and given to the girl who carried it to her mother. John's disciples came and took his body and buried it. Then they went and told Jesus. It says, when Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. So he just heard some devastating news about his friend, his cousin, a partner in ministry, heard some devastating news, and he withdrew. When you hear devastating things, what's your first response? I know mine's not always to go into a solitary place. Recently, there was some devastating news that happened. And if you followed the news, you probably may know. My response this time was when I came to the office, I just began to ask the Lord questions. I know the people affected and the community and the different things that are connected. But then I began to think of other family members, other people who I know who are loosely connected to church and connected to the Lord. And I thought, Lord, protect them so they don't run from you. But sometimes I don't respond like that. Sometimes I go into panic. And it takes Natalie to be like, just take a step back. Just breathe. But often for us, this place, this call to being in solitude is something that we try to escape from rather than embrace. And so when Jesus went off, they followed him. They always followed him around. Mark 6 says the apostles gathered around Jesus, reported to him all they had done and taught. Then because so many people were coming and going that they did not even get a chance to eat, he said to them, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. Again, Jesus and the disciples needed rest and solitude. But sometimes I think that we don't think we need rest and solitude. We go from one thing to another thing. Even our holidays sometimes are not restful. We go from place to place. Me too. And it takes sometimes being intentional. And so when was the last time you were able to come away with the Lord and get some rest and solitude outside of the gathering on Sunday morning? And this isn't one of those, what's wrong with you, you better figure it out. It's just to help you think and go, when was the last time I did that? How can I maybe do that better this upcoming week? And asking the Lord to show you where you can just shut yourself in with him, even for moments at a time. Again, it's not, it's not an all or nothing kind of mentality. It's not one of those, well, I'm going to spend an hour a day each week just shut in with the Lord. And then when you only make it 10 minutes, you go, I'm done, forget it. And so take easy steps, small steps, if it's something that you're not used to or something you've gotten out of the habit of doing. Again, Jesus, he had just finished ministering to people, performing miracles, healing the sick, and in the morning he still went to a place of solitude. Again, this is another one of those questions. After you do something, whether it's ministry related or it's something that just kind of, you have to output, do you tend to isolate yourself and hide? And veg rather than go into a solitary place. Again, Jesus, after he did ministry, he slept, because it says early in the morning when it was dark, he got up. So he must have slept. But I know sometimes in the busyness and the tiredness that occurs in our lives, rather than taking a moment of solitude to be refreshed, we just continue on. We continue to run. Are you with me? Sometimes, I know in my own life that it requires to be intentional about changing our schedules. That I think if we are desiring to continue to pursue the Lord, allow him to change us, that we have to revisit our schedules. Revisit the things that we're doing, the things that are priority, the things, the extracurricular things, the things that always vie for our attention, and make some decisions to spend a little more time in solitude, physical solitude, but also asking the Lord to change your heart so that your mind and your heart are in a place of solitude, even if you can't escape for a moment. Again, I can't make anybody do that. Sometimes it requires just a look at your life to go, where can I put place of solitude? And maybe I need to not do something else in order to do that. Again, I'm not going to tell you what to stop or not stop. Lance Witt, in his book called Replenish, Leading from a Healthy Soul, that's the name of the book, he talks about some of the things that prevent us from being healthy spiritually. He says the pace in which we live, the need for speed, and he goes on to say that many of us live with a stuck accelerator. The frantic pace of life resides in the church as much as the community. We keep the pedal to the metal, trying to grab every possible opportunity. Adrenaline can be our hormone of choice, and hurry is a devious soul enemy. See, Genesis 32:24, it says, so Jacob was alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. We know that Jacob was alone with the Lord, wrestling with the Lord. And so what I was saying is that in order to be in a solitary place, I can't go to Bridgeview, shut my eyes, and lock myself in with the Lord and wrestle with him very well. I could be arrested. It could look like I'm having a mental break. Because at Bible college, in my room, by myself, I wrestled with the Lord. I wanted him to make some choices for me, and he wouldn't. He told me I had to make the choices, that he would be with me in whatever choice I made, but either choice would change my life drastically. They were two different directions, course of action, and I was mad, and I remember yelling and being upset with him and wanting him to change things, and all he said was, trust me, and that made me upset. I'm sure other students heard me. Maybe they were afraid of me. But again, you can't do that at Bridgeview. So there's times when you need to be alone with the Lord. Maybe up hiking, up hunting, out fishing, where you're able to actually vocalize, where you're able to be with the Lord with your thoughts and your heart. Again, I don't hike or hunt or fish. I'm paranoid in the bush. I scare all your animals away. If you ever take me, don't take me. But if that's you, I encourage you. That allows you to connect with the Lord. If you love being able to go into the things that he's created and just stand and just be, it's not weird. It's needed. Does that make sense? So Jacob was alone. Then in 1 Kings chapter 19, it says, the Lord said, go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake came a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. When Elijah heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face and went out and stood at the mouth of the cave, and then a voice spoke to him. Elijah was alone, was able to hear the Lord even or despite of the distractions. I mean, there are so many things that fight for our attention. Good things, not so good things. And again, you could be thinking, well, I'll just give up my cell phone for a month. Well, if you've never done that before and you go, I'm going to do that now, you might have some struggles and then you would feel defeated and give up. So you have to take steps. Maybe that's something you can do and just like, you know, you just go, I'm done. I'm just getting rid of all social media. I'll never have any accounts again. And if you're able to do that and able to stick it out, it's really a good thing. But some struggle to do that. Do you take time to hear the still small voice of the Lord? Psalm 46:10 says, be still and know that I am God. And in the distractions around us, even the good things, maybe we need to learn or relearn how to go and be in a place of solitude and have a heart attitude of solitude. Distraction is definition or defined as something that distracts. It's an object that directs one's attention away from something else. It's pretty simple. Sometimes when I go look at the dictionary definitions, I'm like, I think I could have wrote that myself. But distractions come from both external and internal sources. So external sources, they could be visual contacts or triggers or social interactions or music or text messages or social media or email or Netflix or whatever. The list can go on and on. Hockey games. they can be things that overwhelm your ability to be in solitude. Maybe you'd want to put work in there. But there's also internal distractions. Hunger, fatigue, illness, worry, distractions, daydreaming, emotions of different kinds. And so there are certain things in both the external distractions and internal distractions. There are things that each of you or me can do to help alleviate those things. So this is where you get to maybe shout out some things. What are some of the ways that you could think of right now that you could personally minimize, I'll say, some external distractions? You don't have to give too much detail. And again, similar to what Susan said, it can be short. You don't have to even come up here. Is there something you think you could do or that you desire to do differently that could reduce a distraction from external sources? Aaron said, get up an hour before your kids get up. I was thinking about that this morning. And I thought, my children get up at 6. How do I get up at 5? I don't. But again, in the season that I'm in, when I don't go to bed till 10 o'clock at night, because my children have just gone to bed at 9:30, isn't going to happen. So that, I mean, where I am, some of you are able to do that and encourage you to do that. I'm going to try that, but I'm an all or nothing person, so I have to be cautious when I try that, because if I try that full force and I'm unable to do it, I will just stop. Anybody else? Yes, turn your phone off. So I don't know about Androids. Apple has a do not disturb feature that you can just click. It looks like a little moon. And you click it, and then all the calls just go right to voicemail. Unless they call you repeatedly, then they ring, which helps you to decipher whether it's an emergency or not. But you can shut off your phone, or you can physically shut it off. Choose a time in the evening when you get home. Now, if you still have a landline, that's good. My children don't even know what that is. But you can still, I think you can take them off the hook and just let it beep. Anybody else? I know some have done social media fasting. Some of you are on your phones right now. A social media fast. Maybe if you like to watch TV, you take a break for a moment. Again, helping be able to go, I'm either in this all or I'm not. Again, not everybody's like that. Natalie's not like that. Yep. So Brendan said you can schedule time with God, and it might sound strange, but you can actually, if you have a day timer or a calendar, you can write Jesus time and then treat it as if it's an unbreakable appointment, and realize if you do break it, God is gracious. Again, Lance Witt, the author of Replenish, he says, following Jesus cannot be done at a sprint. You can't live life at warp speed without warping your soul. Busyness will damage your soul. So if you have an outline, again, we're not going to go through all the questions there. Those are for you to take home. Because there are certain things in solitude when you can go through questions and ask the Lord show you, to help you see things. I'm just going to read one question, and we don't have to answer it. But do you find yourself addicted to a life of hurry, busyness, and accomplishments? If so, how can you break this? Again, not everybody struggles with something like that. Not everybody is addicted to a life of busyness. It's like those who are extreme sport junkies because it boosts adrenaline. And they love to do it. And then they, or sometimes those who maybe get tattoos, it suddenly becomes this thrill. Not everybody is going to be addicted to a life of hurry or busyness or accomplishments. Often, as a pastor, when we gather in other places where there are pastors and we have meetings, they say, "How you doing?" Most pastors' response, can you guess what the response is? "I was busy." That's what most pastors' response is lately. I've even caught myself saying it's busy. I think I answered somebody today. They asked me how it was. I said, "I was busy." And often I have to caveat that with not necessarily church-related, more so the fact I have 3 young children and they're at 8 hours of dance and 3 hours of dance and running here and doing that and this thing. But there's this understanding. Again, we're all at different places. And what works for me may not work for you, and what works for you may not work for Natalie. We're all at different places, different stages of life, different seasons where we have children or grandchildren or maybe no children at home, and it's suddenly a space of freedom. But understanding that this isn't something that we strive for, this is something that we require God's grace in, to revisit some of the spiritual disciplines, things like solitude and Sabbath, learning to rest. Some of you do that well. Some of you could teach us how to do it better. But I think in the culture that we are and the busyness that can happen, again, I came from Lethbridge but grew up in Creston. Trail is a very busy, action-packed, full-speed little city. Creston was not like this. Lethbridge was, because it has almost 100,000 people, and people are always doing something, going somewhere, being at something, going to a concert, going to art stuff, doing this, doing that. But Trail and this region is comparable to the busyness of a large city. And so if you've always been in it, you maybe don't notice that. And maybe you just need to spend a few moments in solitude, and the Lord can continue to work in your heart. Father, I thank you for this day. I thank you for your presence this morning. I thank you for time of worship and being able to hear from you. I thank you that you are doing things, all the time, that you're always at work in our lives, behind the scenes, in our community, in this body. Father, I pray that this morning as we go, Lord, I pray that you would just continue to remind us to take time away. That if we've gotten out of the habit of doing it, that you would help us re-engage times of solitude. Lord, that you would change our mindsets to understand that we can also be in the mindset of solitude, but that we need to do both. Father, I pray that you be with us as we go, that you bless the food that we're about to have, Lord. And again, I thank you for this day. In Jesus' name, amen.